Welcome to the Brian Thomas Podcast. In today's podcast, I speak to muse, model, and fashion designer Harris Reid. Harris talks about growing up with an early love of fashion, having a supportive mother who encouraged experimentation with gender fluidity, and the new MAC collection that celebrates freedom and self-expression. Working with a number of high-profile clients, Harris talks about having Harry Styles as a client, as well as working with Sam Smith and Florence Welch. We find out which lucky celebrity is next on Harris's wish list to dress, and we hear about the most recent celebrity customer to shop the collection, Miley Cyrus. Harris describes the process of creating makeup to truly represent who you are and explains the way in which the Fluid Beauty Collection from MAC is creating a moment in history. I'm Louise Duffy and this is the Brian Thomas Podcast. Harris, thank you so much for joining me on the Brian Thomas Podcast.
I am so excited to be here and I'm pumped to start chatting.
I know. I'm so happy to talk to you because you are just the most spoken about name in fashion and beauty now at the moment. So what's life like for you?
I love great intro. It's great. I mean, you know, it's crazy kind of given the times that we're in for, I feel like you just said it, it's kind of been not exploding, but there's like a lot going on. It's extremely exciting. I'm working on my collection for February. I obviously have this incredible launch coming out with MAC with the makeup. I feel like, you know, life is good. Obviously it's a bit challenging times, but you know, it's giving me the excitement and the motivation to kind of create and do what I do.
But like, if this is what you're doing when everything is slow and life is humdrum, what would you be like on normal speed when life is normal?
I mean, I've actually been, me and my mom, because we FaceTime all the time, we were talking about this last night. I was like, Mom, if I can pull this off now, like what, the world is my oyster. I mean, because, you know, if we weren't doing this, you know, probably be, I don't know, definitely traveling. We missed that traveling. But you know what I mean? I think it'd be doing everything to kind of like a bit more of an extreme. Like obviously I would be kind of taking to the streets, throwing my makeup palettes at people, wanting to do makeovers in the streets. I don't, you know, doing the collection even like bigger and grander. So I'm like very excited for, you know, when we get to the new state of normal, hopefully in the future, to kind of take everything I've learned during this period and just kind of like inject it into everything.
Well, we're so excited to see what comes. So let's go right back to the start. Okay. Tell me about when fashion really started to play a big role in your life and your self-expression.
So I think it really came from me. I'm a child of a film producer father and an ex-model mother turned candle maker perfumer. So creativity has always been very much in the house, pottery, dancing, painting. And really fashion kind of came into play, I think, when I was about 9 years old and I was living in Arizona at the time because we moved a lot. And I remember I was very kind of bullied as a kid because I liked to, you know, wear, I don't know, quote unquote flamboyant things or things that were different. And I remember being so labeled by the community as weird or gay or bizarre. And I really, for me as a kid, used clothing as a way to kind of build up an armor as well as a way for me to kind of rediscover who I was and how I wanted to kind of not just identify, but like showcase myself to the world. And that process really kind of is how I go about designing now, whether it's for a client going on stage or for a cover or anything I do. It's really about, you know, who that person is and what they're trying to put out into kind of the world. And then weaving my kind of fluid narrative in there of, you know, clothing, beauty. It's for everybody. It's for anyone to feel like it, you know, helps them reach the heightened version of themselves. So it's definitely kind of through my childhood and different things. And like almost using, like, I remember we had a costume box of old feather boas and things and like putting those on and wearing like a gold sequin cape to primary school, which you can imagine turned everyone's heads. So, you know, it's just, you know, fashion is meant to be fun and it's meant to make us, you know, feel good. And it's not meant to make us feel ashamed or, you know, hide who we are, but really kind of act as that mirror that just radiates us outwards.
So when you were labeled as a young child as weird, perhaps because you didn't fit the norm, did that ever cause you to retreat or did that entice you to go full on and go all out there?
It really, I think, was a mix. I think as a kid, I felt like I retreated because I was scared. I didn't know what people were saying. I felt really judged. I was at 9 years old. I was also figuring out who I was. And then I think once I kind of sat with it and really kind of like was at home literally playing dress up and, you know, talking with my imaginary friends. I was a weird young kid. And having, you know, my own kind of exploration and having a really supportive mother that I could speak with, you know, that's, I think, when I kind of almost like went back out guns a-blazing and really pushed the glimmer, the shimmer, the whatever I was trying to wear and put on my back out there to a whole new extreme. And then that's kind of how I've always lived my life since then. You know, I liked a bit more, you know, subdued, calm moments, but really if you're going to go for it in life, I feel like you kind of have to go guns a-blazing, you know, sequin capes and all.
Why not? Especially now. And, you know, I think your mom obviously then was so supportive that made things probably easier, did it?
Definitely. You know, my mom is like my rock. You know, she is a woman who's done so much. She's one of the most talented people that I know. And, you know, she always, you know, I think the most you can ever give to a kid, at least in my opinion, is like validate them and make them feel like they're heard and seen. And I think for her, even though maybe she was still trying to figure out what I was trying to do or who I was, she just always said, you're valid and what you do matters. And I don't think I could be 24 years old and have done all the things that I've done, even now doing a full-blown collection during like a global pandemic, without that love that what I do has purpose and meaning. And it's more than just beauty. It's about the message that represents. And that definitely comes from my mom.
That's amazing. And that's like good parenting advice for anyone listening. Just everything is valid and how you feel is so important. So at what stage of your life did you start to experiment with gender fluidity then?
I think it was more really when I came to London is kind of when I really just, my eyes were really opened. I think I moved a lot as a kid. I was very kind of exposed to, you know, different queer individuals and to different kind of people. But it was really when I came to London, it was kind of like I was smacked in the face. I remember like going to Charles Jeffrey Loverboy events. He's an amazing designer and he had these amazing kind of club nights and just meeting these people. I kind of kept feeling like I was got more and more comfortable and more in a space where I felt like I could be genuine to who I was. And I realized that there was a part of myself that I felt like I was like almost having a battle with. So when it came in, when I really came to my fluidity, I loved and fell in love with the idea and becoming this person that really didn't feel like I sat, you know, having to be a fixed gender or having to be a fixed thing. You know, at the last 2 years of my life, it was very much in a place where I was going by they, them, those are my pronouns. And it was a place where I felt safe and that's who I was. I'm now at a place where I still identify as gender fluid, but I'm going by he and him because that's where I'm at with my gender fluidity. So in 20 years, might be they, and you know, 5 years, it might be they, and like 2 years, it might be she. Like I have always looked, I've never looked at life as a black and white thing or being a category. You know, even within my fluidity, I've had my own internal struggles of, you know, when I was decided to be gender fluid, it wasn't really this big mainstream thing. And then it became, you're gender fluid, boxed in, you're they, them. And almost, I was like, no, you're putting me in another box. And then that box didn't fit who I was. So it's amazing because it's a way that not only with myself, but through my work is how I experiment leading into this collection that's coming out, you know, in this upcoming fashion week. It really is pushing the gender binary and really pushing this idea of what men, quote unquote, and women, quote unquote, can wear. And really just kind of exploring that idea of, you know, expression. You know, one can put on their back whatever they want to. Again, it's separate from my journey, but it's still a part of that journey in itself.
And how important do you think that is for other people? You know, was there anybody that you looked to that you saw that kind of, you know, self-expression and comfort in who they were, whatever that might be, or whatever category they might feel they fit into? How do you think I'm wondering, how does the role model status fit with you? Because surely there are people who are like, well, look at Harris Reed, you know? Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a big mix. Again, I know I just talked about my mother. You know, she, I think, did as much as she could to expose me to as many different people and as many different and unique individuals as she could, whether that was, you know, her gay friends, her queer friends, her non-gender conforming friends. I think, you know, I was able to really see different people. I think I can't pinpoint one person that I was like, you know, like you just said, that one icon. You know, I now work with someone like, you know, Sam Smith, who is, you know, non-binary, and they're they, them. And that's someone who I respect them so much because that is who they are. And they put their neck on the line and got a lot of criticism for it. And, you know, that's someone who I look up to. If people look up to me, I look up to Sam Smith. Like, but, you know, there's definitely different individuals. And I think being in London and being a London-based designer, you know, every day, maybe not right now with, you know, the state of the world, but normally being at a dinner or at a party or just in the streets or on the bus, like I love taking the bus and, you know, you find, I love to spark conversation with someone, and usually it's someone who's maybe dressed a bit, you know, crazy and out there. And then we end up talking, and then their story and that narrative, and, you know, what they've had to go through to come into themselves and come into a lot of the times their kind of identities. I have friends like Maxim Magnus, who's an amazing trans model, you know, her stories. It's a lot of kind of weaving different people's stories that almost makes my person that I idolize, which hopefully helps me be as much as I can be. I don't want to say a role model, but just someone that, like, I don't know, can, you know, if people can look at me and be like, well, if Harris is doing this, 6'4" with red hair, who is, you know, on the spectrum of, you know, gender queerness, and they are, can live their best life, then so can I. Like, I can wake up and put on what I want to wake up and put on, and I can be who sounds so cliche, but want to be.
Yeah, it must be so wonderful to make it easier for somebody else. I think that's a special thing. So let's talk about now, because you have a tight deadline. Your collection is on the way. Talk to me about your design process, okay? Where does it start? Where do you find your inspiration?
My design process is, it's fluid. I mean, I love the word fluid as well, because I use it for every aspect of my life. I think fluid is about, you know, it's moving here, there. It's never fixed or set in stone. But the process usually kind of starts from some kind of narrative, in terms of sometimes I have a dream, sometimes it's about myself. A lot of times it's fueled by what's going on in the world right now. And I usually kind of take the three. So let's say it's a world problem usually happening within either the queer space or something that's very, I'm passionate about. Like there was like something happening when there's all the gay purging in Chechnya, and that really had all this anger and this frustration and this fighting. And then I went to the National Portrait Gallery and was looking at old war portraits and this idea of anger and the way that that's expressing itself in another material form. And then I went to really moving lighting exhibition at the White Cube. And then this all really kind of messy in a way kind of take form on a mood board. And then I start kind of collaging, and then we go into actually starting the toile. I use a lot of kind of vintage pieces, and I love to kind of reuse old garments and kind of repurpose. So we use a lot of that in the fittings. Some mm-hmm. of the products as well will end up being old remnants from old projects or old pieces, and then kind of take form. And with this collection especially, it has been that process, but times 20, just given the fact that, you know, fabric stores aren't open. So I've had to go to the hardware store, become really good friends with the guy at the corner shop. You know, it's using different things. We couldn't get the fabric hand dyed in Italy, so me and my three interns are using a back garden, and we're hand spray painting 250 meters of tulle for a gown. So, you know, it's constantly changing, but it's definitely inspired a lot by, like, you know, a heavy narrative of obviously self-expression, obviously pushing gender kind of binaries, but then also usually like kind of a core character, if you will.
Wow. I think that's, I can't wait to see the dress with 250 meters of tulle. That's going to be fabulous. Let's talk about your graduate collection, because that's really when a lot of people got to know you. So your graduate collection with Central St. Martin's, breathtaking, but it was really when we were in the height of lockdown, and it was the first one. So nobody knew, like there was panic and everything was shut. How on earth did you create what you did during that time and make it look that good?
I mean, if I didn't do that collection, I would not be working now, because like you said, it was a labor of love to an extreme. I mean, I live above a B&Q, which is a hardware store. So that became my saving grace, because we went in literally into lockdown, school closed that day. We had 2 hours to get all of our stuff. And I literally was left with what I bought, which is not enough at all. And within fashion, people who know, you will always forget a zipper. You'll always forget a button, yeah. Fabric. You know, even sometimes you buy the wrong amounts of fabric. So literally, I had an intern move in with me for 2 months, and we literally didn't sleep. At one point, we were sleeping, and we both had to share a bed because the room, the kitchen, the hallway, and the bathroom were so full of pressed, we were using taffeta, that we like couldn't even walk around. And we literally like got glue from downstairs. We got cement, some kind of cement sealant. I don't know how to say it, like a seal that you put when you're doing construction. And we used that for the inner brim of the 3 meter by 3 meter hat that ended up going in the windows of Matches. Like it was.
That's outrageous.
It was so outrageous. We were using print sticks. I mean, anything and everything you can find from a hardware store. I was taking like a demi couture spin on it. And I remember when it finally came together, we got the green screen in my living room, emptied all the furniture out into the hallways. All my neighbors were so lovely with me, literally filling the staircases with like couches and things. And we painted the walls green, put up a green screen, filmed the whole thing, just me and her with an iPhone, because you couldn't have anyone in the house, of course. And we did all of it. And then anyone who helped was all remotely online, and it was all fellow students. And we kind of like pulled off this huge collection that launched with Vogue globally. And I think we went across almost every Vogue website worldwide. And it was like kind of a huge explosion. So that has been kind of my driving force going through this.
That's unbelievable. But I just think that, you know, that's the start of a story when you have, you know, ateliers all around the world in probably just a year or two, that you will look back. And that was just such an incredible experience for your lucky intern as well. She worked her ass off, I'm sure.
But I mean, it was actually fabulous, because once things calmed down after that, when we shot with the Evening Standard magazine, it was her first photo shoot, and she was wearing some of the pieces we created together, and she was like crying. Like, it was like a really beautiful thing, because like you said, you know, a month and a half of living with this chaotic, crazy 7-foot-tall redhead was probably, you know, a lot. But to see it kind of come together and have the kind of global response it had was like nothing you can even describe.
And speaking of that response, then, what does it mean to you when you get accolades like, you know, the Harper's Bazaar Breakout Designer of the Year last November? What was that like?
It still doesn't feel real, I think, because, you know, the world is in such a crazy place that it's crazy when things are happening, and especially positive things. And I'm always to see the world as a positive place. But, you know, I remember I was like in my studio here in London, like, which is actually in not an abandoned hotel, but in a hotel that's closed down. Like, again, all about adapting to the times. And I remember I got the call, I believe, from the editor in chief. And I remember I just broke down crying because it just, you know, I graduated like a couple months ago, really. Like, I just got my diploma in the mail, like, a month ago. It was really late arriving. Yeah. Just to like have this kind of, you know, designer of the year with Harper's Bazaar magazine I bought as a child at the hair salons in Arizona with my mom, and now I'm in London, you know, creating these clothes, you know, not only for myself, but, you know, for some of the biggest celebrities in the world that I've always admired, and I'm getting an award. It just felt like it's those things that, like, it's just, it doesn't feel real. It's really hard to kind of process. And it usually hits me in a way of, I'm going for like my little walk for the day or my little workout or whatever I'm doing. Like, I like, well, sometimes like jog, because I love jogging, is how I get out of my head. And I just stop and I just cry. It's a lot of crying. That's how I kind of process.
But why not? But I do think that, like, you know, it always, there have been some incredible names that have gone through Central St. Martin's, you know, some of the best names in fashion, but I can't imagine it has happened as quickly or as immediately for anybody. So that's, I mean, congratulations. It is spectacular to behold. And now we have this uncertain life and, you know, we're all at home. Everybody's doing everything from home. And as a result, our fashion has become a lot more pared back, you know, and like, I'm wearing leggings from the bottom down. You can't see it. You don't need to know that. But, you know, so how has your clothing, which is such exuberance and such vivid personality, how has that found a place in the world that is really rather dull at the moment?
I mean, great question. I mean, the funny thing is most people, and I have a lot of fellow friend designers who have gone a bit more in the casual route, or you know, into what people are actually wearing. I've kind of gone the opposite. I've gone into, well, if people who already weren't wearing my clothes to begin with, like in terms of, you know, down the street, I make things for kind of big moments, or if you're going to wear it, you really need to be someone who's ready to kind of make that statement. Mm. I was like, well, let's just go bigger. So even with this upcoming collection, it's completely not ready to wear. It's almost kind of living art. And I've really kind of taken a bit of a Victor and Rolf approach in how I'm kind of moving forward, where, you know, I want my clothing to, like you just said, we're in a very dark, sometimes dull, sometimes boring, stressful, anxiety, all the words that we can imagine, time, that I want my clothes, when you see them, and not just the clothes, but the world that I'm building, to be absolute and complete escapism. Mm-hmm. And not in a way of like, oh, I need to get away from here, but seeing like almost like the light at the end of the tunnel. I've always designed, you know, with that narrative of these clothes are for everyone, anyone and anyone can be who they want to be. Cringe, but it's true. Mm-hmm. And so I want these clothes to really represent that. So I've kind of gone the opposite and just gone bigger. I'm like keep looking behind the computer because there's some gowns behind me, and like there's just, it's gone big. We're going big.
For me. So tell me, okay, then androgynous clothing. Okay, so way back that was considered, or something was considered androgynous if a woman wore a suit. Now it has twisted and it's really the feminine spin, you know, and, you know, men embracing the more feminine aesthetic. So what's your version of it? Where do you think it is?
I mean, I don't know, because it's like you said, I think, you know, it's, history has been so interesting to see that cross, you know, before, you know, I remember my mom talking about when she went to someone's house and she was wearing pants, and the little kid was like, why is this woman wearing pants? Why is she not in a dress? And that wasn't even like, my mom was like only 60. She's not even that old. And like to hear that and how she was looked at as almost androgynous for wearing business suits because she ran a powerful like company and she was doing like, and then I think about now, like you said, where it's more, you know, if I'm doing something, whether it's for like, you know, Harry Styles or another kind of male persona or someone who like is wearing something a bit more kind of feminine, it's kind of seen as like androgynous. So I think my middle that I'm trying to move to is literally just completely getting rid of labels altogether and just finding that norm. I think the only way for us to find any level of normality within expression is to push it to the extreme. So mm-hmm. if I show a collection with, you know, 200 meters worth of like tulle gowns on, you know, gorgeous men and, you know, a non-binary individuals, hopefully then that, you know, inspires, you know, maybe just some guy puts on, you know, a bit more of like a cute, sheer, billowy shirt. And then more people start doing that. And we just start normalizing expression. And then maybe that person who's too scared to actually be who they are because they live in this world of, you know, men in suits and women in dresses, air quote, you know, they actually feel like that they can kind of come out of their skin in a non-judgmental society. So, you know, I'm just going to keep pushing it to an extreme that might even upset some people. But if I do, then I'm doing something right.
Exactly. And you mentioned some like huge names in the world of music, Harry Styles, Sam Smith. What's it like to collaborate with people like that, that you probably, you know, have looked up to for quite a while?
I mean, there's nothing to describe how incredible it feels, just because the people that like Harry, Florence, Sam, Troy, you know, they're people that not only have I looked up to for so long, but when I've worked with them, they're everything I would expect they would be and more in terms of, it's not just, you know, giving someone clothing, it's someone believing in your vision. It's someone who was, you know, Harry Styles has been someone who was there from day one. He was my first ever client. Like my first ever client meeting was with him. And, you know, it's been a couple of years now, but we've still continued to collaborate together. And, you know, I think, you know, someone like Florence Welch, I get a lot of like life advice from, because she's just so, you know, she just knows so much and she's so whimsical and otherworldly. So, you know, there's nothing that can describe kind of working with those people, because I still don't believe it. And I still feel like that kind of bullied kid on the playground wearing his mom's frock kind of thing. And just to be able to, you know, now make a frock for someone on the first, you know, male cover of American Vogue is an incredible feeling. So it doesn't fully compute sometimes in my brain, but it's like a complete honor. And I feel like grateful for every single day that I get to work with these people that I respect.
What a way to start though. Harry Styles was your first client. My God. Is there anybody on your wish list now that you would love to get your hands on and dress?
I recently said Miley Cyrus, and then she bought my boots, her cover of Rolling Stone. Like she actually bought them, which I thought was amazing. Thank you, Miley, for supporting young designers. Mm-hmm. So I have to kind of think of the next one. So, I mean, I've always said someone like Tilda Swinton, just because she was the one person I saw, especially when I watched Orlando as a kid, which is now my favorite film. The way she was able, you know, you talked about androgyny, the way that she, for me, when she'd be like at Cannes Film Festival, she would wear, you know, Heider Ackermann men's suit, very masculine, quote unquote, very kind of, you know, this regal, I don't know, male energy. And the next night would be in Chanel Haute Couture and, you know, be very almost quote unquote feminine. And the way that she, I don't even know if it was intentional, but that she just kind of played within her gender as a young kid seeing that, I was like, oh my God, like, you know, I can be anything. I can express myself however I want to. So she's always been on the dream. She, wow. So if you're out there listening, you know, tell me.
She's an avid listener, believe me. So tell me then, let's talk about MAC, because MAC is the perfect connection for you. You know, their philosophy has always been inclusivity and diversity, and that's all races, all genders, everything. And I think that's it's such a vibrant mission statement that they have. So how did the connection come along? Because you've created a wonderful collection with them.
I mean, like you said, when MAC from day one, literally when I started first working on my collections, were the people who kind of like, I think through Instagram popped up being like, we can help with your makeup. And, you know, in the beginning they were just doing my makeup for events. And like, it was great because anytime they came over, I remember being a model when I was younger, like 16, and always feeling so uncomfortable with makeup artists because I looked androgynous with my long hair. Like, oh, we're going to stick lipstick on you and put you in a skirt and shoot you. And no one asked me how I wanted to look or how I wanted to be represented or how I identified. And I loved it because I remember any MAC makeup artist that would come over to my house, especially this guy, Beau, he was like, who do you want to be today, sweetie? Like what will make you feel comfortable? Like I'm here to like help you. And I would be like, it was almost like that mother father hug that you kind of needed. And I remember like, I've been able to kind of explore who I am and also just having fun through working with them, cutting to then doing collections that I've done with British Vogue and the things I've done now leading into then the collaboration when they kind of approached me being like, you know, I think what you do, what you stand for and who you are is so beautiful and powerful. Like would love to kind of, you know, do something. It just felt so poetic and so honest. And it was just, we had the most incredible time. I went to New York. This is like 2 years ago. We, you know, went through all the colors. I sent them a huge brief. I was like, I want Studio 54 glam rock, but I want also Rococo Renaissance realness. Like their team was so incredible and helping me literally come up with colors that represented words. And as anyone listening can hear, I talk a million miles a second. So, you know, they were so amazing when I was like, you know, talking about gold, it wasn't just gold, but like what shine, what shimmer, what matte, like, you know, kind of application. I wanted nothing to be in tubes or brushes. I wanted everything to be tactile because as a person who literally thinks of my clothes as hopefully demi couture, everything is like hand done. So I wanted the user to feel tactile. And also with it being a fluid makeup range, I didn't want anyone to feel intimidated by a brush and not knowing how to use something, or a tube and feel like it was maybe a bit too traditional, which, you know, if that works for people, it's great. I have tons of tubes of lipsticks. I love it. But for me, I wanted this to all literally be, you stick your fingers in it, it slides in your back pocket, slides in your purse. And then when we were doing the packaging, I was like, it has to be, I probably can't curse, but, you know, effing incredible. Like, I wanted it to feel like anyone who's messaged me and wish they could buy something that I make, but can't maybe afford it or can't have it in their life, could be able to access something that I didn't sacrifice one thing for. You know, it's gilded, it's gold, it's old world, it's me drawn on the front in my clothes. It, you know, it feels expensive and fabulous. Sorry, too many words, but yes.
Oh, it's beautiful. And Terry Barber, the artistic director of MAC, he was on this podcast before. Like, what a guy. And I just would imagine he has spoiled you for other makeup artists. Will anyone else be good enough?
I mean, exactly. It's Terry. I remember I knew I loved him when we shot together 2 years ago, and he used to work on the Lee McQueen shows, Alexander McQueen. And we talked for about 3 hours just about how McQueen would talk about skin. And I've never been so, I was crying. I've never been so moved by someone talking about skin and the application of the dewiness and the shimmer. And it wasn't about like the what it looks like on the outside, but the meaning behind it and the storytelling and the narrative. And it just, it made, Terry, when the Terry speaks, I fall back in love with what I do every second, because it's whimsical. It shows that we're not just creating things, we're creating magic. We're creating, you know, a moment in history and time and blah, 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 like all that fabulousness. You know, Terry puts that into one.
He's a magician. He really is. And so maybe down the line then, what do you want this brand to become? Like, what's the best future for Harris Reed?
I see it being, you know, a brand that has a lot of different tiers to it, in terms of, I think for me as a designer, I'm at a place, especially with the world going forward, where I, you know, I'd like to keep, you know, the clothing really elevated, handmade, almost demi couture, because I want to use the clothing as vessels to spark conversation. And then within that, do what I've been finding, especially through lockdown, which I'm kind of thinking I'm going to continue with, a lot of collaboration. So whether that's collaborating with my mother and like launching a candle line, or working with someone amazing like Mac that carries the same common ethos that I do about, you know, global acceptance and individuality, keep kind of working in that way. Because I think for me as a designer, it's a way that I can, you know, create pieces, dress, not just VIPs, but people, again, who, you know, have that same message, have that same like grandeur and, you know, take a stance that I do, and just kind of build the brand in that way. You know, I really want to grow it. I want to give back. I work with charities like Mermaids. You know, I want to be able to do a lot of kind of educating the world, but through, you know, really beautiful high-end art, and like, but make it accessible.
Exactly. Tell us about Mermaids very quickly though as well, because I think that that's really important. You know, we talked about you perhaps as a role model, whether or not that's something that you're comfortable with, but you're certainly comfortable with giving back and helping. Tell me about Mermaids.
So Mermaids, for people who don't know, it's an amazing organization and charity. Basically, it's designed to help, it's designed for non-gender conforming youth, and they help also give resources to their parents and to family members to help them just more understand, you know, maybe things that that child would need, or just, you know, it's, I always believe education is key. And I think, you know, if someone's educated on something, then they can be able to make their own opinion. So just giving parents and people around them and a support system to help them further understand, you know, how that child's feeling or how they're expressing themselves, or, you know, it's just a really important, it's like a really important kind of system that's in place. So anyone looking, you know, to donate or help out, you know, Mermaids is such an incredible organization. And I know a lot of people that, you know, have been like benefited from their work. So shout out to them.
That is wonderful. Well, okay. So we're almost out the other side, I hope, of this, you know, this lockdown period of our lives. Where's the first place you're going to?
I want to go to... I just want to go to a really fun place to dance. Like, I almost, someone asked me recently at the coffee shop, because I'd get my one coffee a day in the morning, and they were like, where, like, what are you going to do? And I literally said rave. I've like never properly gone to a rave, but I was like, I just want to dance covered in glitter, like all night long with people that I don't know, and just like dance and out of way, listen to like, I don't know, like an, let's say like an 80s, like an 80s forest rave. That's probably the weirdest thing ever. I want to dance. I miss dancing in platforms. I miss having like, you know, when you wake up and your feet hurt so much from wearing like heels platforms. I'm going to lay down and just know that I had a great night. That's right. You'll find me in a forest rave. That sounds weird, but that's
forest rave. We have to find one. Harris, it has been such a joy to talk to you. It's been amazing to watch what has happened in the last couple of years. And I'm really excited to see what comes next and to try your products with MAC. Thank you so much.
I can't wait. And honestly, it's been such an honor to be here. And as always, like, stay safe and such an honor.
Thank you, Harris.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Thomas podcast. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and share and follow us on Official Brand Thomas on Instagram for more updates.